it's a legitimate issue, because there's lots of people out there.
Google Hangout.
Don't, you know, who don't like to be on video, let alone on video in a public way like this. But the question is, how important is the video? I mean, it's kind of nice, and the switching is nice. But we did these webinars that there is no video, and after about a second, you know, people say, oh, it would be nice if we'd see the presenter. But after a while, just follow the PowerPoint and hear what the piece of person is saying, and you know, even if there is a video, you kind of don't pay attention to it. So
yeah, because I don't want them to know.
We've never particularly missed the fact of not having.
Look, I'm wearing no clothes.
And you know, the other downside of the Hangouts, maybe that it's only 10 people can participate directly, and the others have to go and watch on YouTube when it's broadcast. But there's a delay, so the comments and discussion cannot be quite as synchronous. It's about a 2 minute delay, about a 1 minute delay, I think, on the broadcast when I tested it.
But you see, you could use it synchronously, but also you could download the film and strip out the video and podcast it as well, so people can listen to it in their cars. If you know, you won't have the reference in terms of the visual reference, but you will have that as well. So it's a resource that's there that people can actually take and use. It's how we use it, and being smart about using it. That is the way. That's why you have to orchestrate it in a certain way, and maybe you have to sort of segment it in the way it's used. So again, it's a digital literacy in the way that people use it. You have to think very carefully about how you will orchestrate it, how you will use it within the social context, how you'll use it synchronously, face-to-face, how you might use it asynchronously afterwards. All those things are things that are digital literacies that need to sort of be thought about, and how you're going to do that. And I think it's in that sense, I think it's quite revolutionary, because it is so, the ease of getting into this, the hurdle into it, is very little if you have a webcam, if you have a microphone, if you have a Google Plus account, and it's free. Yeah, but
mentioned the three things that in my experiences have been significant hurdles. Like when we do a webinar, there's a function that we can unmute people. There's like, you can push a button. I mean, you all know that. Right? Raise a hand, push a button. I unmute the person, they speak. Like, but about half the time, they don't have the microphone down right. There's an echo, or they don't realize they raise their hand. So something that I thought, oh, this is so dead simple. It actually turned out to be much more difficult. So what we end up doing is just we take in questions by text rather than raising hands and unmuting and muting people. And so I think this is that easy. But then again, we're dealing with lots of people. I mean, if you want to increase the reach, we're dealing with people who may have slow computers. These days on laptops, most laptops have webcams, so I'm not sure that's that much of an issue. But it's inconsistent. There's also people on slow broadband. I only just last week upgraded to a broadband that I could do this on. You know, so I think those are also the considerations. Not to say this is not excellent. I want to use it. I'm going to be using
it. But the other day I was walking out in with my iPhone, and I got a message to have a hangout from my partner. She was talking to someone in Sweden. I had some headphones on. I turned my iPhone on, and there I was talking to that person from my iPhone, walking down the street. Now that, for me, is something I always dreamed about as a kid. And it's here now, if you've got access to that.
Can I just come back to Dominic's question? A couple of things on the video. I think the video is quite important, Dominic. I appreciate all the things you're saying about bandwidth, and also one thing I hadn't thought about though was the sort of cultural interpretations, and it fits in quite nicely with a paper I'm writing with my colleagues from Hull on cultural sensitivity in the online world. Different cultures and different approaches may have a different perception of how they will interact with an online space. But for things like, I'm just going to click this up now, I think the visual is very important. So for things, for example, the window I'm sharing now, which is a Google map, which if you were actually telling somebody how to navigate from A to B in that map, I think that would be an ideal use of using this technology. or anything. So it's not only the people, but it's the videos, the materials, everything you can bring in, it's integrated. And of course, there's no reason why you shouldn't just use the audio itself. But certainly I'd like to give a lot more thought. You've raised some questions in my mind about cultural interpretations of online spaces.
I mean, we use screen sharing a lot in the webinar, so all of those things you mentioned, which isn't quite good enough for YouTube quite, but it's good enough for pretty much everything else. So we do that a lot for as a training opportunity. But every time, you know, I mean, on Skype, I know I have, because we work remotely, a lot of us, we talk on Skype all the time, but to get some people to push that video button isn't always easy, even in kind of a, you know, individual thing where it's private.
Can I just say that, Theo, could you sort of go into that a bit more about what you did with Hull and some of the sort of concepts behind the use of video and the ideas behind those literacies? Because that is quite interesting. You're muted, Theo.
Sorry, I was typing. I probably haven't the time to go into that now because I need all sort of background props and materials and slides and things up. But basically, what we were doing was we were looking at video not as just a plain transmission of knowledge. You know, we do this video for maths and this video is suitable for history. But seeing how these videos, different videos, could fit into different subject contracts. Text by designing a rubric or a learning framework, a learning design, if you like. Well, certainly I'd be happy to do more of that in the future, but I think it needs quite an organisation. If you go to the site edmediashare.org, you'll see a lot more about it there. Perhaps Lisa might like to introduce herself. She's in Switzerland to speak.
I just talk. Okay.
Yeah.
Hello. My name is Lisa Stevens and I am English, but I now live in Switzerland. I moved here with my husband's job. So my background is as a language teacher, and I've taught right through all the different phases. I started out as a secondary teacher, and on the way I did some adult education and taught from kindergarten right up to adults. So for the last 7 years I've been teaching in primary schools. And online CPD is marvellous, and it's particularly good when you live in Switzerland, and you miss all the people in England, and I don't actually have a job, so it makes me feel like I'm actually still contributing to the world.
Maybe there's some job opportunities there.
Well, I have actually managed to go. I've got my third day of subbing coming up on Friday, so that'd be good. And Apple Switzerland are starting to want to use this, so that's really good too.
Yeah, and can I draw people's attention to the fact that there is a corporate Google Apps. So if you have your emails linked into Google Apps, you will be able to put apps into the box and add them. From the apps market, obviously there's got to be a monetization part of this. So in a sense, you can actually drop in, and I don't know how much, I haven't explored it very much in this sense.
Do you want me to explain how it works for education?
Would be wonderful.
Yes, please.
Basically, Google Apps for Education is the business apps, but Google have said that they're going to keep that absolutely free. So you get all of the business apps for free. It is designed initially for business, but there's obviously people like me who are Google certified teachers who are helping to introduce that to as many schools as possible and higher educational institutions. So please don't feel, basically Google has a very strong policy in supporting. They've recently given £1 million to the Science Museum. They really want to profit out of business, not out of education. And I believe them when they say that they're going to keep that free forever.
So you have these sort of third-party tools, like MindMeister, Theo. Could you talk a bit about MindMeister, maybe?
Okay, yes. MindMeister, if I go to my drive. Actually, MindMeister is a concept mapping application, mind mapping. And I'll just pull one up now. But I thought I had one up. I'll pop one up now. And it's a collaborative online space where you can create mind maps with colleagues that you can invite on public maps. I'll just get one up now and share it in Google Docs.
No, and of course, if you share something in Google Docs, you have to give it permissions to everyone who's in the room.
Okay, do it quick. It'll be quicker to do it on screen share, and then you get the idea. I'll just come out of Docs. It'll be a bit quicker. So I'll share the selected window now. It should pop up. So you can see this mind map that people can edit collaboratively. Add nodes to structure discussions, debates, raise questions. But the good thing is it now integrates with Google Drive. So if you subscribe to MindMeister, there's pre-subscription, which will give you 5 or 6 maps, or the paid subscription, you can, I'll just bring that back to the center, you can now save it on your Google Drives, and just like a Google document, it will be in that area of your computer and on Google Drive, which is previously the Google Docs. So again, there's a lot of value, there's a lot of mileage there.
And of course, you have things like in Alan's field, you have coding, real-time iterative coding that you could do collaboratively between people. So you can actually see the results of what people do, or you could give a real-time explication, demonstration, and say to someone, try it. And you could switch between different screens again to do that. So again, you're starting to ramp up the way people are showing their expertise to each other. And I think, again, this is really revolutionary.
Leon, I've just turned on Air Server, which allows me to mirror my iPad onto the PC. Can I just see if I can share the screen?
Surely.
Okay, so to do that, presumably I just press screen share, is that right?
Yes.
Here we go.
Let's try that. Okay, let's see what's going to happen. Right, okay, the screen, right, and then presumably that's my, hang on, what am I doing? Right, so that's my desktop. Okay, that's not worked then, has it?
No, I think you're going through a browser, so that's part of the problem. I was trying to switch cameras, and then you get into an infinite regress there as well.
Yeah, it is on his screen.
So can I not show you what is on my screen?
Yes, you can see.
Yeah, but it's a sort of recursive.
Okay, so that's right.
Picture, it's the recursion.
So if
you made it as a new window rather than just a new tab, that would probably do it for you.
How do I do that? Sorry.
You can just switch to that tab, and that will share. It will share that tab.
Okay, so
that's
I press
the recursion. So any tab you share, any tab you have, whatever you have up front, it will be shared.
Okay, that's okay. Hang on.
Give it a go.
yeah. Right. So can you see that? So at the moment I've got my, I can see my own iPad screen on the screen under Air Server.
So share your screen with us.
So let's try and do that. Hang on, screen. No, I'm pressing screen share but nothing's happening. Oh, no, hang on. Yeah, right, hang on. There we are. Can you see that?
That's it. I saw it.
We saw it briefly.
Okay, but you can't see it now, no?
No, it's a blank screen.
Okay, no problem. So it looks like you can't do it then.
I can see it now for a second.
Just briefly. Ah, we've got...
Oh, no, sorry, that's... Hang on. Hang on. What am I doing? oh, no.
You do need proper switching technology, and the problem is a lot of people use things like Wirecast and other things that they use, which are professional switches between cameras, because the browser can't cope with it, I think, in many ways. But oh, look,
I just shared my screen. If you want to have a look, I just shared a bit of my screen that has a switching between screens when you click on share screen. and you just need to click on the right screen where that thing you want to share is.
Yeah, they're layered. You have to put it. You have to put it into what's called focus, and then that's it. You got it.
Yep. So I've done it.
Yep, that's it. Oh, it's in focus. So they're one underneath the other, and so you have to bring it up and find out which and put it into focus as you would with browsers.
Right. So
that's interesting.
So if I make it full screen, it won't. No, if I make it full screen, it's still working. You still see that? Okay. Yeah.
No, we've lost it now. And now it is. Okay. Now it is. But it's coming and going.
So in other words, if I don't make it full screen, it's fine.
Yep.
But if I just have it as a window, as it were, then you can see it, no problem. Yep.
Can you run one of the apps on then? Let's see if it works.
Yeah.
Yep. The other thing I've noticed is it's only when the person is talking that their screen actually comes on. Mm. The moment you stop talking, then we lose it.
Yeah, there's an algorithm, obviously, to follow the highest voice.
There you go. So
if I click on an individual's video or the screen, and it will just stay on there while
you're talking. So I'm recording now. I'm recording in Hokusai. I press stop. And let's see. Oh, hang on. What's it doing? Hang on.
Keep talking.
Ah, that's okay. It seems to. It's for some reason. I normally when I press stop, it's no problem. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's crashed. Let's try again. Hang on. I just want to see if I can play. Oh no. Okay. It's not. Yeah, I'm not. Yeah. It's not liking that for some reason. Let's just see if I can. Let me think.
So while you're trying to get that together, Joe, can I just throw it out further to people about sort of their thoughts on how we could build a CPD network around this? Because that's what I find interesting, building an expertise or a CPD network around this kind of thing. That's more like senior management or senior leadership level, because that will start to break out of the sort of what I would call teach meet trick pony thing, where people come and show stuff again and again and again. That's fine, but I think this would be a really good strategic tool as well. I don't know what people think about that. Alan, what would you think about that?
Well, I'm just wondering if it's a bit of a too big a move to introduce lots of new things all at the same time. I'm just wondering if you're better off with one of the existing groups like the Ed Chat. There's a UK one, there's an Ireland one, there's the US one, or the Teach Meet, or the Computing at School Hub meetings. There's all sorts of different ways, and I think the best thing maybe just to introduce this technology to them and see how they can take, how it will complement what they're doing. One of the things, I think it was Dominic earlier was talking about whether you actually need video or not. Well, you don't actually have to watch the video. You can always move the video portion behind while you're doing something else and watching. One of the things I find that I like about having the video is when I take part in one on a Sunday night called Tech Grumps, and you never actually see anybody. It's all through Skype. And then we end up, you interrupt each other a lot, whereas this one, the way that this works, you can actually see who's talking and what's going on. And but anyway, back to the original point, which is I think it's a great idea to introduce this to a group that's already running and see how it works with them.
I don't know if you were here or heard the beginning of this sort of conversation, and that was there's going to be hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of this coming out now. So what really is important are things like archival, annotation, retrieval, where you actually sort of can time code interesting points or things people have said as the whole process is going on. And in some ways orchestrate it so that you can actually retrieve that either through playlists or links, timed links within the videos, so people don't have to trawl through hours and hours and hours of this stuff for the stuff they don't want to see. They can scan quickly. And surely that would be a smart way to do things as well. I've always thought it would be lovely to be able to aggregate all the conversations that people were having about certain things in teacher.
The link into the chat, which is to Classroom 2, which is just another group that, in some ways, are aligned with what we're trying to do. I think there's lots of groups already making use of similar types of technology compared to the Google Hangout. I just think that one of the things that Google Hangout does is it makes it more accessible to people to create online content, whereas things like GoToMeeting, the webinars, the flash meetings, they're not as accessible as this might appear to be. But there is already lots and lots of exemplar material. And if you have a look at the classroom too, you'll see that they have a conference from time to time where they have hundreds of simultaneous sessions, like the one that we're having taking place. And then every Saturday morning, they also have a regular one where you can sign in. And if you don't get to watch it live, you can always watch it afterwards.
But my point is that you've got so much of this stuff that's valuable. It's the archiving of it and being able to put it in a pool for people to retrieve on demand, if you see what I mean. Because that and so if you build that content to do that, specifically think about how you build that content, then it's a smarter way of going about it rather than, you can have the serendipity, but also if you orchestrate it and think about doing it, then you can start to build a kind of structure of CPD that actually builds a whole new way of doing things. So you can model it for people, you can scaffold it for people, rather than just have it all happen in the sort of in the sort of sphere that we've got here. It's just trying to say to people, think about that now.
I get the point you're making. I suppose if you compare it to a shopping experience where the teach meet is sort of like the impulse of purchase, when you go to a teach meet, you don't go thinking, oh, Leon Sish is going to be there and he's going to be talking about this. This is why I'm going to teach meet. You kind of go to teach meets not knowing what to expect but wanting to take something away. And it may be that the first or two presenters don't give you exactly what you're looking for. And then when the third one comes along, it's like, oh, great, this is something I can use. But it's less planned. It's more haphazard.
And for me, being able to segment that expertise would be a very powerful tool. That's all I'm saying. It's just want people to think about that anyway.
So would it be worth then, if you were going to do this kind of thing again, publishing a schedule? And for a moment, my mind is leaping to the Michael McIntyre program that I saw on Saturday night. I'm not a big telly addict, but I saw Michael McIntyre comes on, so that could be Leon Sish. And hi, everybody. Right, we're here tonight, and we've got three speakers, and we're going to listen to James, Paul, and Rachel. So, and then we hand it over to James, and James is going to talk about so-and-so, does his bit, and so on. And you can advertise it in advance, you can tweet it and let people know what's going to be in the schedule, and then ask and encourage people to blog, link, write up afterwards, what happens.
Yeah, I think that's what we're working towards, isn't it? I mean, today it was very much, let's try it out and get some real people in, and very much what we're working toward. Certainly think that what this does to offer is can be very proactive and reactive. It can quickly, you can decide on a theme if something happens. These could be organised more or less on the fly, and if people are around, they can build up to an archive or theme, or, as Alan said, they can be sort of themed sessions for an hour. All can be curated together and build up the knowledge.
Yeah, as I said before, Google had the 40 seminars. There's no way you're going to get through those 40 seminars. But because they're in a timetable, because they're published, because the times are published, like an electronic programming guide, you then can go to the bits you're interested in and segment what you're interested in. But you need a centralized hub to do that, plus a load of localized hubs.
Can I just talk for a moment, please? I just wanted to say that there's a bit of confusion about these Hangouts. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can.
Yeah, I was just going to say, normal Hangouts have a limit of 10 people, but Hangouts on Air have an unlimited number of viewers, but a limited number of people who can be talking.
Yep.
That's right. 10 concurrent. So if somebody drops out, there's a space for somebody else. Is that correct? But the live stream is worldwide.
Unlimited. That's right, yeah.
And that's the game changer, that. But then, of course, everybody has access to the recording, which again can be re-edited, remixed, shared.
That's right. I say there's two game changers. First, the archiving function, which is almost instant. And second, you can have unlimited viewers. And those viewers can join in via Twitter and tweets.
Can I just share something with you all that I found this afternoon? It's on YouTube.
So are we going to have to go to the YouTube tab at the top there, Theo, and click on that?
Yeah, it should be up now.
So if everyone could do that.
And just to move it away from the sort of scope we've been, this is live surgery using Google Hangouts.
And of course, you've got ethical and other concerns around these things now, Theo.
Yeah, I mean, the ethics of that video actually was it the patient's consent, everybody's consent. What I'm saying, it doesn't always need to be 10 people stuck in a room. I think Google Hangouts on here work very well for mobile devices. So there's lots of scope.
Yeah, I mean, a number of years ago, they did have a closed system whereby consultants would be having video conferences with a number of families around sort of very similar types of conditions. And of course, these issues, these ethical and IPR issues, we haven't touched upon this time. Maybe we could touch upon that another week, maybe next Wednesday, about how those sort of encroach and how you have to manage those ways around as well, because a lot of this stuff, everyone's been well behaved tonight, can get you into trouble. Whether, you know, you have to think about that too in terms of how you the collegiality and all the other things in there.
So can I just come back in? The question that you raised earlier, Leon, I feel like I'm in a too runny sketch here where I answer the previous question, not the current one. One of the ways that Lisa has suggested archiving it. We could just tweak quotes from the actual seminar, from the Hangout. So I've just put an example in. So it could be, you know, James said limited number of speakers and limited viewers. And if we had a hashtag that we agreed on for each particular episode, you know, each weekly or monthly episode, then people can use that to refer to it.
Well, you could just do it like UKHF. They use the same hashtag week in, week out. Then it all gets nicely archived, right?
Mm-hmm. Except the only reason is if you use the same hashtag, then people can't refer to individual episodes. Where I was saying if they're recorded, like number
one. Oh, I see. Three, yeah. But you can add a 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. at the end, couldn't you?
And of course, you can curate them in a YouTube playlist.
Yeah.
Inspired by them.
And the other interesting thing would be to give people an exercise. Everybody could take the recording and do their own remix, or you can pull bits out. You know, if you've got to do, you could actually re-edit and reuse, just the same way we would use Stalker Archive footage.
And then the other thing is,
1 minute to go, Leon.
Yeah. Well, one last thing. You finish off, Alan, because we're gonna have to stop at 9 o'clock, because that was the designated time. So please finish off.
When you have a YouTube video online, you can reference just an individual point in the video. You don't have to tell people to go to start.
That's right. You can have that granularity, which allows us talking about. And also, if you were to archive it quite smartly, you could then aggregate those little moments if you wanted. So I'd like to say thank you very much to everyone who's turned up tonight. And I think I don't know what you think of the experience, but I think I've got a lot out of it. And I think people who've been watching will find out the stats later. I hope they too will have got something out of that. And we have got a hashtag for this. It's UK CPD number 4 change. UK CPD for change, if you want to discuss it later on Twitter. And thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
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 Good.